federal policy has consequences in Alaska. In the payroll of federal workers alone, but also in energy policy, public lands, administration, health care, and defense, just to name a few. I'm Steve Heimel. We are happy to have Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski with us today to listen to you and discuss the issues important to you and your community. Our number, 1-800-478-255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. So we're ready for your calls. We're Senator Lisa Murkowski on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Did you know Kodiak Island already produces about 90% of its electricity from clean, local, and sustainable hydro and wind power? Renewable energy, it's working for Alaskans. Learn more at realaska.org. This message sponsored by the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, we are with Senator Lisa Murkowski in our studios in Anchorage. Welcome to the program. Welcome back.
Great to be with you, Steve, even on a rainy morning, but it's good to be home.
Yeah, and APRN's Libby Casey was supposed to be with us by telephone from her office in the House Press Gallery, but it turns out there has just been an earthquake in Washington, D.C.
Well, I just looked on my BlackBerry here, and we've got an alert from the Capitol Police saying that due to the tremors, that the building has been evacuated. So, you know, maybe in our absence, there has been a grand compromise on how we're going to solve all the problems of the world and the budget and the deficit and the wars and the earth has moved. I don't know.
Yeah, the earth has moved. I like that. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the top issue in the news. I want to get out of the way right at the beginning. And that is, you lost a key critical aide, someone we all know and have known for many years, probably you have for a number of years as well. Arnie Fugelvog has taken a plea deal and is awaiting sentencing now. You have lost a key aide, and I just wanted to get your feelings on that because we haven't heard from you on it.
Well, it's really a tragedy at many levels. Arnie, as you say, has pled guilty to phishing violations. Department of Justice has pursued this. He basically fished over the line. He did it knowingly, apparently, and has agreed to cooperate with Department of Justice on this. First of all, not acceptable for anybody, but given the position of trust and authority that Arnie had on the North Pacific Fisheries Council at the time that he engaged in these violations is absolutely unacceptable. It is a disappointment is a mild term and perhaps not the right word choice here, but I think so many of us feel that the trust that we had placed in Arnie has been violated. Extremely unfortunate. He is going to pay the consequences and quite dearly through jail time and through some very substantial fines here. But this is a situation that I think so many of us who knew him as a person, as a fisherman, and as a policy maker at the staff level are just extraordinarily let down and disappointed by this.
I want to move to our calls and our emails here, but I just to follow up, I'm interested in how this was handled in your office, because these violations were some time ago, and apparently he knew that he was kind of facing charges for a while.
We understand, not only from the allegations that were filed within the court, the pleading documents that were filed within the court, these violations occurred years ago, years before he came to work for me. I learned in early of this year, this winter, that there were violations that they were looking into, but what I was told was, there's not going to be anything of consequence here, and we're going to, quote, work things out. I think we all recognize here in the state. We've seen individuals that have been under investigation for many things, and some of them never panned out. Some of them took years to go through that process. So I made the determination that until such time as there was something that was materialized, I was going to allow for that presumption of innocence until shown otherwise. Arnie came to me on the 29th of June and told me that he was going to enter this plea agreement with the court on the 1st of August. And what he did not tell me was that he had already signed a plea agreement, that he had signed this in, my staff learned, the day that the pleadings were filed with the court on August 1, that in fact he had already made that plea agreement, admitted to the guilt back in April. I think if I had known at the time that he told me that he'd already entered that plea agreement, I would have taken different actions.
What are you going to do staff-wise? Do you know? I mean,
we're looking. You know, there is a huge hole. As you know, when we talk about issues that impact our state's economy, those areas that have real impact to Alaskan families, so much of it surrounds our fisheries and our fisheries policies. So I am looking very actively to find that right fit, an individual that has the breadth and depth of experience that I need in the fisheries area. Arnie was not only responsible for fish, but he also handled a broader portfolio that involved everything from the Arctic to transportation. What I have done is reworked within the office to fill those holes, but finding the person, the right fit to assist on fish policy is going to be key. There have been many meetings already this month to talk with folks about their level of interest, but I am still soliciting names. So if anyone is interested, please, this is not an idle offer. Please let me know. If I'm not available to speak to directly, give my chief of staff a call because we need to get the spot filled. It's too important.
Okay, the calls are already coming in. Our guest is Senator Lisa Murkowski. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. We've got them queued up there, too. And I think, Senator, we'll go right to the phones.
Okay, that's good, yeah.
Mark in Palmer, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Senator Murkowski.
Thanks, Steve, for taking my call, and welcome, Senator Murkowski. I'm really concerned about both the debt and deficit and the reduction strategies to deal with that. And I was kind of curious if you can explain why you and the rest of the Senate Republicans are first and foremost focused on protecting the super wealthy.
Well, I do not believe that we need to protect the super wealthy. I think the super wealthy are doing pretty well on their own. I'm assuming from your comment here that you think that we need to look at tax reform as well as we focus on spending reductions. I agree 100%. And I am part of a caucus that has taken a position most clearly with the Budget Control Act that we saw move through in early August that said, look, now is not the time to be raising taxes. We're in a recession. We've got high unemployment. Raising the tax rates is not something that I think that we need to look to as our solution right now. But what I do support is looking at a more comprehensive tax reform, a reform that allows us to close off those tax loopholes, to address the tax expenditures that I think have created a very unfair tax system. You may have read the article, the opinion piece that Warren Buffett wrote last week. And in it, Buffett says, you know, people like me, the super rich, are, I think the term he used was being coddled by the Congress. He mentions that he paid 17% of his earned income last year, and that people working for him paid almost twice that when they made, you know, what you and I would consider to be more reasonable salaries. That's a problem. That's a problem. So, you know, when we're talking about we can't raise taxes on the rich, let's define who the rich are. Warren Buffett's a rich guy. Somebody who's making over $10 million is a rich guy. If you are, if you're in that category where the president is saying anybody over $250,000, we need to raise your rates. Well, think about who those people are. These are the guys that have the small businesses that are creating jobs for other people. So are those the ones that we necessarily want to raise their taxes for? So when we're talking about taxes and a more equitable structure, I think we need to look at that from the full range. And when we're talking about protecting the rich, first of all, let's define the range that we are talking about here. But I think it is fair to be looking at how we reduce the incentive for those to avoid taxes. We've got to address our corporate taxes. The big story last year was GE not paying any taxes at all. Well, look at how they were able to do that. They basically were producing most everything that they had offshore. And they were doing it because we've got a corporate tax structure that is one of the highest in the world. So we've got to engage in comprehensive tax reform. And I'm one of those Republicans who believes that to take taxes off the table for purposes of how we deal with our budget and debt and deficit issues is not a reasonable approach.
Mark?
Well, I appreciate that, and I was wondering if maybe you would advocate for higher tax rates for people, say, making $1 million or $2 million a year rather than the $250,000.
Right. Well, I tell you, Warren Buffett's article really intrigued me, and I think it's something that is worthy of consideration. What I want to be cautious about is kind of doing this by, you know, kind of a piecemeal approach. The only thing that we deal with taxes is, okay, if you make $5 million or more, you're going to see a tax hike. That's not how we need to approach tax reform. I think most of us out there would agree that we've got a tax policy in this country right now that's just crazy. There's no reason that the average American can't figure out how to file their taxes every year. There is no reason that those who can figure out how to take advantage of certain loopholes should gain that advantage, and people who can't afford the high-priced CPA get taxed more just because they can't work those loopholes. We've got to make it more equitable. We've got to make it more fair. We can reduce the rates on individuals while we eliminate some of the tax expenditures and loopholes that are out there.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, Mark. Nice job in eking out a reply there. Of course, I don't see this coming out of the supercommittee. Do you?
You know, there's so much good work that has been done already. Look at the Simpson-Bowles report. The Gang of Six spent a lot of time trying to figure out how you can really work to build in tax reform as part of this deficit reduction. They moved the rates down. They simplified them. I thought it was a pretty good proposal. So it's not as if this committee of 12 needs to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of good work that has been done out there. I'm just not sure that they have the political ability to advance that in this proposal that we may or may not see come out on the eve of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's on the eve of Thanksgiving. What do you think there's going to be time to take care of before next year in this Congress? I mean, it clearly this
outside of the debt discussions.
Yeah, I guess the theory was it goes to the super committee and everybody kind of watches them, you know, like deer in the headlights or something. I would assume.
What are the rest of us going to do?
Yeah, right.
Well, the fact of the matter is we've got so much that needs to be done. But you're right. I think all attention is going to be on what's the committee doing? What's the committee doing? Which direction are they going to take? Whose ox is going to be gored? You know, the fact of the matter is when you're looking to find, $1.5 trillion in spending reductions, everybody's going to be impacted. We're going to be impacted here in this state. Every state, interest group is going to be impacted. You cannot avoid it.
Well, and we always see a lot of disparate Alaska impact. I mean, just look at the FAA thing, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some construction windows were missed.
Yep.
Just because there was 1 week where there wasn't the money. The
money wasn't there. And here's where I see us going, unfortunately. We've got just a little over a month now before the end of this fiscal year. We have done exactly one appropriations bill in the United States Senate. That was the military construction bill. It was a good bill, good things in it for Alaska and our military installations here. But that's one of 12. So what's going to happen? We're going to get back in September. We may move Homeland Security through. But the other 10 are going to be victims of a continuing resolution. We see this time after time after time. If we can get by with just one continuing resolution, I that would probably be progress. And I say that with a little bit of sarcasm in my voice. A continuing resolution is no way to run the government. But we are, I think, in a spot where you're running out of time, you're trying to beat the clock with the fiscal year, and the energies and the attention of far too many members are going to be on what's happening with this select committee.
Our guest is Senator Lisa Murkowski, and Senator, we have this update from the USGS, which has measured a preliminary magnitude for the earthquake that reached Washington, D.C., of 5.8.
Wow, that is big. We shouldn't be making jokes then.
No, I think there could be damage here, and I would think with that type of magnitude, some of those little structures there. But Mother Nature.
Wow.
We'll stay up to date on that. What this has done is taken everybody out of the Capitol building, of which there weren't that many in there.
And that's probably a good thing. You know, during August, most of Washington, D.C. kind of clears out. But that's a big earthquake for the East Coast.
Yes. We had a call, an email specifically about the Postal Service, and it came, you know, as we know, there's apparently a short list now,
right?
And the post offices that were not on the road system are not on the list of potential closers anymore. We get this one from Carol in Lake Minchumina, where it's not on the road system, and so that post office is no longer under threat. But nonetheless, she had a more specific question. She said, do you support Congressman Young and Connolly's letter to the Postal Regulatory Commission, which suggests repealing the retirement pre-funding requirement of the 2006 Accountability and Enhancement Act? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I tell you, the Postal Service has been in a bit of a financial mess, and that may be an understatement. But they have been required to pre-fund their retirement and it is the only entity that has been required to do so, and it has really put them in a real financial box. And I, along with many of my colleagues in the Senate, are looking to how we can deal with that to take the immediate pressure off the post office. The financial pressures off the post office. So direct answer to Carol's question there is, yes, I do support that. But I also recognize that it's just one issue that the Postal Service is dealing with. They are looking at a world where people are no longer communicating by letters. They don't have that revenue coming in. They have not been able to adapt to change as quickly as they might. You know, they're a governmental system. And so I think it's going to be important that we look to how we can make the Postal Service more efficient, how we can work to reduce their overall costs. It has potential impact and threat to us in Alaska and our small, rural, remote communities, that whether it's Lake Minchumina or Non-Dalton or Bettles or wherever, the fact that you don't have any other way to get your materials, your prescription drugs, your groceries, you are limited in how you access the world without reliable mail service. And so it is going to be an issue for us here in Alaska.
Diane of Anchorage suggests, might it be possible to prioritize the post offices in a different way? It appears they're looking at certain economic parameters.
Yeah.
But if you were to take the economic value of the goods moving through the postal delivery system in rural Alaska, you would find it to be very large, because people are getting groceries and all kinds of things.
Right. And it's different. You know, we don't have a system that views it that way. What they look at are number of users, how many people actually enter that post office on a daily basis. And when you look at it that way, Alaska's going to lose every time, because we've got post offices that just serve such tiny, tiny little communities. But they are the lifeline to that community. So if we can view our rural post offices perhaps through a different lens than just what is the volume of foot traffic that comes in, for instance, then I think we're in a better position.
Let's go to John, joins the program from Petersburg. John, you're on the air with Senator Lisa Murkowski.
Thank you, Senator Murkowski, for taking my call. Do you think Congress needs to protect American workers from current and future free trade agreements? And I'd like to make two brief statements related to the question. Outsourcing American jobs to foreign countries has resulted in the loss of about 25 million jobs in our manufacturing and white-collar sectors over the past 20 years. And the second observation, I don't believe that cutting American corporate taxes in half, or even eliminating them, can compete with the profits corporations can accrue by paying foreign workers astoundingly low wages. China, $6 a day. Mexico, $10 a day. Thank you.
John, thanks for the question. I have supported most of the free trade agreements that have come before me since I've been in the Senate. I actually voted against two when I first came in. We have three that will be pending before us when we return in September. This is with South Korea, Colombia, and I'm drawing a blank on the third one. Let me just suggest to you, though, for instance, the free trade agreement with South Korea is one that is particularly important to us here in Alaska. About 250 million, I believe, goes out in seafood exports to South Korea. In our timber products, it's round numbers, about 50 million. And with our mineral exports to South Korea, I believe that number is about 150 million. So it is significant to a state like ours to have that opportunity to move, whether it's our minerals, our fish, our timber, and to have that availability to do so. You speak about the issue of outsourcing, and I think as we look at our just very stagnant and struggling economy, what's happening with the loss of jobs, I think it is critical that we work to make sure that the jobs that are created benefit us, the jobs are here rather than in other countries. I think we need to look to our corporate tax policies to make sure that they are not being viewed as a disincentive to set up operations here in this country and to hire and employ Americans here. I think but there are other things. It's not just tax policies that we know send businesses overseas. Look at the regulatory environment that our business community is involved with. The tsunami, since we're talking about natural disasters here with earthquakes in D.C., but this tsunami of regulations that have come about within this particular administration, the cost to businesses, whether it is how you now have to track your emissions, regulations that are coming out as they relate to the FCC, regulations as they come out as they relate to the FDA, all of a sudden the cost to businesses to do business here, to hire people in this country, it's overwhelming. And as we are being tasked to find ways to reduce the spending levels in this country, to increase economic growth in this country, I think we need to recognize that you can do it through tax policy. You can certainly do it through reductions in spending, but we have to be looking at the regulatory environment that we have established and what that does to incent or disincent business and growth opportunities.
John?
Well, I appreciate your answering the question.
All right, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Yeah, you got some thoughts on job creation? That seems to be tossing around between budget reduction and job creation. It seemed to be the political juggling act that's going on right now.
Well, so much of what we saw this summer. Think about the activities in Congress and the signals that were sent to
investment.
Investment. It was so mixed up. It was so chaotic. If you're an investor, if you're a businessman that's looking to expand or add folks, I think good money stayed home. They said, until we know what Congress is going to do, we're not going to make that investment. There was that constant threat all summer long that, well, if you don't figure out a plan, we're going to reduce the credit rating. Standard & Poor's went ahead and reduced for the first time. Our nation went from that AAA rating. Now Moody's and Fitch are still out there, but they have sent those negative signals as well. And so when we talk about job creators, economic growth, we can do a lot through the legislative process. We can pass laws until the cows come home. But what we cannot do through a law is to give that confidence to a business that, okay, I'm going to have more customers here. It will be wise for me to expand or bring on more employees. We've got to put some certainty out there instead of continued chaos.
Well, we have a weird situation now where money is kind of weirdly tight in the sense that lenders just are not wanting to lend.
Well, but think about it this way, though.
There may be many that would just soon expand a business or see an opportunity or whatnot. They can't get the money.
And I understand that because I hear that all the time back in Washington.
I'll bet you do.
What I'm told here in Alaska is, hey, we've got the money to lend, but the customer's not coming to us asking to borrow because they're not certain. They don't know what's going to happen to my taxes. What is going to happen with health care reform? Will I be required to provide health care insurance for my employees now? Because if I'm at 45 now, but I want to expand and I want to bring 7 more employees on, now I've got to provide for health care insurance. There's what I'm hearing from financial institutions is there is money out there to lend, but there's so much uncertainty coming out of Washington, so much this political brinksmanship that's going on that is causing this lack of confidence, that they're not seeing the customer come to them. So it's at multiple levels, I think, that we're dealing with this.
We're talking with Senator Lisa Murkowski. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. Open for your calls. A local call on Anchorage at 550-8422 as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com.
And by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
Well, it's Talk of Alaska, and Senator Lisa Murkowski is our guest. We got a half hour left and a stack of calls and a stack of emails. I think, Senator, I'll go right to this one.
Okay.
I don't know where it's from, but it's from Donald, and I've heard this one a bunch lately. What do you think could be done about the charter halibut fleet? Evidently, what's going on is that the Fish Council passed, after years and years of debate, a catch-sharing plan. Essentially, the allocation of halibut, the halibut quota is set internationally, and the council has no control over that, but they do have control over the allocation. It took them forever, but they finally came up with this catch-sharing plan, and it's definitely hitting flak from the charter fleet now.
Well, you've not only got the proposed catch share plan that is out for public comment now. I'm drawing a blank in terms of when comments are due, but that is underway now. We're urging people to weigh in, speak up about that. But you also have down in the southeast, you've got limitations now on halibut. Not only do you have a limit on the number, you're down to one. But it's also a size limit, 37-inch, which is about a 15, 17-pound halibut. And the concerns from the charter fleet are very real, very genuine. You know, why would anybody pay the good money that they do to go out to go get what we would call a chicken halibut? I kind of like the smaller ones. They're tastier. But, you know, from a financial perspective, this is just devastating to those who have made their investments, who have been working to provide for their families through the charter sport industry. I am keenly aware of how difficult this has been within the industry here. But I think what needs to be fully understood is that the numbers that we all want, our biomass numbers with the halibut, are simply not there. We have seen the numbers go down year after year. We're not quite certain why, but it is not there. The commercial fleet has seen a 78% reduction in their harvest numbers over the past 6 years. That's pretty substantial. When the charter industry was put on their limits for their allowable harvest limits, what was happening was they were exceeding those limits for the past several years, and in order to have sustainable fisheries management, we need to work it, and there are sacrifices that are made. it has been an issue where the sport guys, the charter guys, feel that they are giving more than they should. The commercial folks feel that they are giving more than they should. And there is no good answer, I think, for anybody right now. But I do think that it is important that we allow for a reasonable management of our fisheries, or we go the way that they went on the East Coast when they just decimated their fisheries. They are still working to rebuild, to regain to a place where they have healthy stocks. The North Pacific Fisheries Council, you know, you can criticize their decisions all you want, but I think it is recognized that we do have a model here in Alaska that is the envy of the other management councils and how they have handled some very, very difficult issues. There's no easy answer on this. I am not a scientist. I'm not a fish biologist. I want to know that we're really operating off the best science that we possibly have in making our management decisions.
Well, we may be at the worst spot. As I understand it, the IPHC says it's just a question of how fast the halibut are getting bigger. There's
right.
a lot of smaller halibut, and we just let them get a little bigger, and maybe we're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
The problem by their population model is in Southeast.
Right.
We don't know how the existing way that they have limited entry is going to work its way through the economics of the system, because there are operators that just, this is not worth it, I'm not doing it, and that's going to cut the size of the fleet. Then when does it get to where the quota can change? For an individual fisherman, we don't know. But
know.
The people in Homer are really worried that what they see in Southeast is coming their way.
That's right. That's right. And they should be concerned because when we don't know fully what is happening with those numbers. When I talk about the numbers, what's happening with the strength of the fishery. All we have to go on is the research, the science that we have, and if it doesn't indicate that we have the ability to take as much as we would like, whether we are charter operators or whether we are commercial operators, you're going to have a lot of unhappy fishermen. You're going to have a lot of unhappy tourists who are coming to Alaska who want to catch the big one. I know down in Homer, you know, the Big Derby down there is a huge economic draw for that community. And if they see that's no longer going to be available, think about what that does for a small community that relies on tourism, and the tourism is associated with their fishery.
Okay, we're speaking with Senator Lisa Murkowski, and we'll go to Roger now, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Roger.
Thanks, and thank you, Senator Murkowski, for, I think, being one of the most thoughtful and least partisan members of the Senate. We really appreciate your service.
Thank you.
The appropriators, I know, and you mentioned that when you get back to D.C., you're going to try to work on some of those bills, and you're on the Appropriations Committee. I'm sure they're going to be looking hard at everything, but the Tea Party in the House particularly has kind of singled out development assistance for some pretty drastic cuts. And in the 2011 budget, the Senate managed to protect health and education programs from those cuts. I think that you support the kind of stretching our resources in the area of development assistance any way we can. And I believe you support the, you know, acting through multilateral institutions, mm-hmm. especially the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria, mm-hmm. and the Global, Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations, mm-hmm. which has the possibility of saving 4 million young kids over the next 4 years. The administration has made multi-year commitments to those institutions as well as to the reforming and improving education for all fast track initiative. Can you share your perspective on on what the U.S. role should be in the international effort to achieve the Millennium Development Goals?
Well, I appreciate the comments, Roger, and your support of what can be done. I think when the United States steps up in a role to really provide for not only humanitarian aid, development aid. You've mentioned, for instance, the vaccines. I have been a strong proponent in recognizing that if we can, through very limited financial investment, with vaccines, to provide for just a little extra boost for children, to help eradicate some of these diseases that are no longer present in this country, but that can wipe out whole generations practically in some of our developing countries around the world, that this is an appropriate role for the United States. This is one way that we continue to show our leadership, our status as a country that is giving, is caring. I'm very cognizant of our budgetary issues and the need to ensure that here in this country we've got a strong economy, because if we don't have a strong economy, it makes it very difficult to help others. So we've got to try to find that balance, but I am not one that says in tough budget times we close our eyes to the rest of the world and the plight that we see. It's not on the front page today, but it seems like so many times this summer we've seen front page stories of just the humanitarian crisis in Somalia, the tens of thousands of children dying, the diseases that they are exposed to. So this is something that even as we grapple with very, very difficult budgetary issues, I think we need to always consider our role as a world leader from a humanitarian perspective.
Thank you. I know one of the supports for the arguments marshaled in favor of U.S. having a three-pronged foreign policy, defense, diplomacy, and development is that, you know, we're talking about jobs in the U.S., we're talking about being able to export, a lot of value-added things to the rest of the world, and over half of the growth of our exports is in these poorest countries, and it's in our long-term best interest to see that their populations are educated and that their economies improve so that we can see these markets develop.
All right, Roger.
Appreciate that, Roger. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is with us, and I've been gathering a bunch of email questions, Senator, but I'm going to go to Kodiak next, where Vicki Joe joins us. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Vicki Joe, you're on with Senator Murkowski.
Well, good morning, Steve, and Senator Lisa from sunny Kodiak.
Oh, I'm glad it's sunny there.
Yeah. Well, Senator, I have a question for you, ma'am, and first comment. You are nonpartisan, pretty much, because you did lose the Republican primary to that Joe boy.
Correct.
And we all voted you in. And we do appreciate you when you do vote on nonpartisan ways. And you just got to remember, the Republican Party also pretty much threw their hand up at you when you lost that primary. I remember the look on your face. And we've talked one-on-one in D.C. on a couple of occasions. And, you know, my biggest issue is still, we're talking deficits.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we end these three wars and one conflict that we're currently in? $7 trillion of this deficit is strictly and totally belongs to those wars and all of the stuff that goes along with them. You know that question I asked you last October here in Kodiak. I've asked you since 2006 to end the wars by cutting off the funding. And that's the only thing I want to call you again on that vote. Will you vote to stop funding these three wars and one conflict that we're currently in?
Well, I appreciate the chances that we have had to discuss this, Vicki, and your passion and very clear commitment to ensure that as we deal with conflicts, as we engage in wars, that that we are engaged for the right reasons. We are, as you know, coming out of Iraq. We'll be out by the end of this year. It is uncertain at this point in time in terms of what will be required to remain in Iraq for any form of security and what the expense of that may be. I think we'll be getting further information from our military leaders on that very shortly. Afghanistan, as you know, the determination has been made to reduce the troop strength there. I think it is very clear, not only from polling data around the country, but just as you talk with Alaskans, you talk to people on an airplane, as much as we support our military, I think it's very clear that people in this country are war weary. They look at the situation in Afghanistan, they wonder if we are making any progress. And we have gone from a situation where we're no longer talking about winning in Afghanistan, but the words that the administration is now using is achieving sustainable stability. I'm not quite sure if we define that as winning or not. Go ahead, Vicki.
If we want to support the troops, we can bring them home now. That's the best support we can give them. End this FUBAR snafu and bring them home now. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Vicki Jo.
All right, Vicki Jo. Thanks for your call. Vic and Palmer wanted to tag on to that. Being as how the presidents all seem to ignore the War Powers Act, most recently in Libya, what good is it?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. And there's a fair number of us that are asking the same thing. I think the president really dodged that. And in fairness, and I'm not going to point the whole finger at him, the Congress, we in the Congress kind of let him dodge that. We've been in Libya now for, I guess it's 6 months. There have been some nuanced word choices to suggest that, well, this isn't really conflict. I find that difficult to believe when we're providing for the level of support that we have, when we are, to follow off Vicki Jo's comments, spending the millions and billions of dollars that we are to suggest that we are not engaged in this conflict. I don't think is being honest. I suppose the good news is that it appears that Gaddafi is finally on the ropes, so to speak. What we heard yesterday seemed pretty encouraging, that the opposition forces had really made some substantial gains there in Tripoli, although today I'm told that, well, one of the sons comes back and says, well, I'm not really captured, and so perhaps we're not getting the full extent of the story here. But the question is a good one. How effective is the War Powers? I think this has been a pretty good example of how the executive, the president, can kind of unilaterally move, and if the Congress fails to challenge, we are in a situation as we are with Libya, with no clear authorization for the level of engagement that we are involved in.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is our guest as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska,
and by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Check the status of your application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for placing half in a college savings account and to add or change charitable donations. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
It's Talk of Alaska. Lisa Murkowski is our guest, and we've got a caller from Willow, but I think I'll first go to a couple of our emails, which have Senator sought to see where or how you're looking ahead to the presidential election.
And I'm not running. Please.
We might have guessed that. But I think, as I think Jose put it, do you strongly endorse the idea of a Republican gaining the presidency next term? Oh, the phone's ringing. Somebody's called you up from your staff to say, we had an earthquake here in Washington.
Really. Avoid that question at all costs. You know, Vicky Joe reminded the listeners here that, I was not returned to the United States Senate as my party's nominee. I have really tried to take a very ecumenical approach when it comes to the votes that I'm taking. I'm looking to what is best for Alaska. I want a president that's going to be the best for Alaska, a president that's going to be the best for the country. And we get so sidewinded with our party labels. And, I do not support President Obama. I supported the Republican nominee. I'm still waiting for the Republicans to kind of sort themselves out. I supported Mitt Romney when he was going through the process 4 years ago, and he wasn't the party nominee at the end of it, but I'm looking very critically at him. I like the fact that he's got that business background. I think we need a leader who is really keyed in on the economic issues and how we deal with economic growth and job creation in this country. And my sense is that Romney could do a good job with that. But I'm looking at who's going to be the best leader for this nation.
Okay, we'll take that as much as we're going to get, I think.
Okay.
Let's go to Rody, joins the program from Willow. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Lisa Murkowski.
Thank you, Senator. Just a quick little tangent, Senator, in regard to readjusting taxable income, et cetera, et cetera. I think when you factor inflation over the last 20 years or so, which is about 80% plus, I think that, you know, $250,000 for adjusted gross income should probably be close to $500,000. Now, I know that'll be a hue and cry from everybody, so I will just leave that, but I wanted you to have that comment. I'm really concerned about jobs in the U.S., and I hear rumblings now that they're talking about maybe adjusting some of the import rules. And that kind of leads back to NAFTA. And if we go back and track it, you know, in the 20 years that NAFTA has been enacted, we have seen a major move out of corporations overseas, and we've heard the figures before. And what I'd like to know is, what is the feeling in Congress? Is NAFTA the real quagmire? How do we get these companies back? And I thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And is NAFTA really the quagmire? I think if it was, there would be a more concerted effort or push to address NAFTA specifically. I think we are looking more broadly at those primarily tax policies that really do discourage companies here in this country, how we can reform that. I mentioned before, we've got the highest corporate taxes in the world. I mentioned the regulatory environment as being a major disincentive for businesses to operate here. I think that we need to look very critically at all of those components that work to push those jobs overseas, and then more critically, how we can do more as a nation. You know, we used to be a manufacturing nation. What do we manufacture in this country anymore? Part of our problem, and this kind of brings it back to Alaska, is we're not harvesting those resources with which we can be manufacturing. Mining is booming here in Alaska in certain parts of the state, and that's good. But in the lower 48, you're just not seeing any level of mining anymore. We all know the stories about our reliance on imported sources of oil. It seems like we get everything from everybody else instead of producing it here ourselves. We've got the opportunities for much, much more domestic production, whether it's in our energy sector or elsewhere. But we put in place policies that keep us from accessing it, whether it's our offshore resources, whether it is our ability to harvest timber down in the southeast. You've got a roadless rule that's precluding you from moving forward. We put in place an awful lot of roadblocks to advance jobs and economic growth in this country.
All right. Thanks for that call there, Rhody and Willow. And Senator Murkowski, got about 30 seconds left, and I'm going to just toss you this one, because the Education Department is going to start giving No Child Left Behind
waivers.
AYP waivers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see any prospect that Congress can come together on reauthorization of the Secondary Education Act? Because it's how many years have it been? What, 3, 4?
Oh gosh, more. Yeah.
More.
No. We do need to reauthorize Elementary and Secondary Education Act, ESEA. We cannot do it as it was initially drafted. Some of the component pieces in No Child Left Behind just don't work for us in Alaska. We got to get rid of AYP. We got to move to a
growth model. Is there traction somewhere
to
do this?
You know, we made some headway 2 years ago, and then Senator Kennedy, who was the chairman of the Energy Committee, or excuse me, the Education Committee, of course, passed on.
Okay, we're out of time.
Not a priority, unfortunately, okay, amongst the chairman there.
Thanks to the whole crew. Thanks, Senator Lisa Murkowski.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Rasmussen Foundation sabbatical program offers nonprofit executives and tribal leaders paid time away from their jobs for personal renewal and growth. As a result, organizations often become stronger. October 1st is the deadline to apply. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.